Blog Talk Radio.
Good morning, everyone. Welcome to the latest edition of the Saturday Morning Wake-Up Call. I'm your host, Cyril Quinn. I'll be taking you up to the bottom of the 11:30 hour. We have a lot to do today, a lot of things going on in the world of sports. We have a couple new segments. We have a new segment I'm going to add to the program called Star of the Week. Of course, you still have time to go vote on that. Vote on your Star of the Week. We also have Hail to the Redskins for you, excuse me, Inside the Burgundy and Gold for you Redskin fanatics, if they, a segment which should be canceled based on the way they've been playing lately. But we're going to begin first, front and center, with college football in Norman, Oklahoma. That's tonight where Texas Tech, the number two Texas Tech Raiders, Red Raiders, will take on the Oklahoma Sooners in the latest game of the century in terms of the season, in terms of the college football season. If Texas Tech wins this game, then for all intents and purposes, they will clinch the Big South, the Big 12 championship in terms of the South, and will play Missouri in the Big 12 championship. With all due respect to Baylor, I mean, Texas Tech is not going to lose to them. And for all intents and purposes, this, you know, I'll have a hard time seeing Texas Tech lose to Missouri in the Big 12 championship. So this, I mean, this could be for a spot in the national championship if you're Texas Tech. But if Oklahoma, and they have an excellent chance of winning this game based on the fact that it will be if Norman, Oklahoma, wins this game, then you have a little bit of a mess as far as the Big 12 South goes. If all three teams, Texas Tech, Oklahoma, and Texas, finish in a with one loss, then the tiebreaker would go to the team who's rated highest in the final BCS standings. So we will not know that until, say, probably 2 weeks from now, as the regular season will conclude after the first weekend in December, before the first weekend before all the conference championship games. So a lot on the line in this particular game. Texas, I mean, if you love offense, this is the game for you. Texas Tech comes in. These are two of the highest scoring teams in all of college football. Texas Tech comes in undefeated. And unlike Texas, you know, Texas went through that gauntlet of four straight games playing against ranked opponents. And you had a sense, you were just waiting for the ball to drop for them to lose one of those games. I mean, you had a sense that they were going to get picked off one of those weeks, as it had been just almost impossible to play that level of football for basically a month. Texas Tech has a big advantage. I mean, this will be their third straight game against a big-time opponent. Of course, they beat Texas. They beat Oklahoma State. But coming off a bye week, I really think that they are in good shape coming into this game, coming off that bye week. They get a chance after the Oklahoma State win to kind of catch their breath. They get a week off, get an extra week to prepare for Oklahoma's vaunted offense featuring, of course, Sam Bradford, who is a leading Heisman candidate. And I think that's going to help them out a lot. Had they had to play this game last week, I would not have been as sure if they can go to Oklahoma coming off such a great win against Oklahoma State and be able to take out Oklahoma. So I really think the bye week helps out Texas Tech, and I like Texas Tech in this game. I know the game's at Oklahoma. I know Oklahoma's offense is just as good as Texas Tech, if not better. They have probably a better running game. But I watched Texas rip up, and Colt McCoy rip up the Oklahoma defense a few weeks back when Texas beat Oklahoma at the Cotton Bowl. And listen, and I said this last week, I've never seen a passing offense as potent as Texas Tech. I mean, Graham Harrell and Michael Crabtree, and it's not just about Michael Crabtree. I mean, they have three or four other quality receivers on that team. Crabtree is the main go-to guy, and certainly the best NFL prospect without questioning. He would be, you know, a top 10, top 5 pick if he were to come out after this year. But that offense, that pass offense, is deadly. I mean, they throw the ball all over the place. Nobody ever touches Graham Harrell, seemingly. He moves well in the pocket. He's not a statue. He's accurate with the ball. I mean, it's a machine. It's an absolute machine. And they put so much pressure on your offense to match them point for point, possession for possession, that it, you know, they just totally just take defenses apart and forces your offense to probably go for more than where it normally would. than what it normally would. But you can't kick field goals against Texas Tech. Field goals do not do it. I mean, you have to score touchdowns, considering how great that offense is. But equally as good offense as Oklahoma. Oklahoma's offense is, you know, they're putting up, over the last three or four games, they're putting about 48 points a game in the first half of games. So if this game is not played in the 40s, I'll be shocked. I think both these defenses are pretty good. I think Texas Tech defense is decent, but neither one of these defenses is good enough to slow down those offenses. There's not a question about it. It could come down, frankly, to who has the ball last. I mean, that's what this game could be decided by, that simple fact that whoever has the ball last. Of course, the turnovers always are the ultimate equalizer, and they always determine these big games. But everything be equal, if it's all equal, I think Texas Tech wins this game. I know that's saying a lot considering the game is in Oklahoma, but I think they're on a roll right now. And again, that offense looks unstoppable. I've never seen a passing offense like it in college football. There have been a lot of great passing offenses over the years, and recently in the last 15, 20 years in college football. Of course, that is not the only big game on today's slate and today's schedule. You have Michigan State traveling to Penn State. Michigan State comes in to rank number 15. Penn State, of course, is number 8. And, you know, this is the Big Ten title could be decided. If Penn State wins, they will be in the Rose Bowl and will win the Big Ten championship. If Penn State loses and Ohio State wins, then Ohio State wins the Big 12, the Big Ten championship. If Penn State, the only way Michigan State can win the Big Ten championship, they need a lot of help. They obviously need to beat Penn State, and they would need Ohio State to drop this game. So Michigan State is on the outside, basically on the outside looking in as far as making it to the Rose Bowl, but they still have an opportunity to do so. BYU travels to Utah. BYU comes in, of course, ranked number 14. They will take on Utah, who still has hopes of playing in a BCS game and also possibly a national championship, though it's not going to happen. But they're still riding an undefeated season. Utah wins this game, they will clinch the Mountain West title. Cincinnati and Pittsburgh square off. Cincinnati ranked 19, Pittsburgh ranked number 20. The winner of this game controls their destiny as far as the Big East championship goes. If Pittsburgh, and of course that Big East championship winner will get an automatic bid to a BCS bowl game, so a big game in the BCS. And think about the Big East. He's talking about Pittsburgh and Cincinnati. These are not exactly household names when it comes to the world of college football. As far as the ACC goes, you know, a big game at College Park tonight where Maryland will try to, who by the way controls their own destiny, will take on a Florida State team coming off a loss against Boston College. And listen, it's very simple for Maryland. Very simple. Win tonight, win at Boston College next week, and you'll play in Tampa Bay for the ACC championship with the opportunity to play in the BCS game. That's it. That is cut and dry for the Maryland Terrapins. Maryland, of course, Maryland goes and beats North Carolina last week, who was a ranked opponent. You know, they're undefeated this year versus ranked opponents, but the problem is they're 0-3 against unranked opponents. So go figure. Again, I don't know I can't predict this game. I don't know which Maryland team is going to show up. Maryland has been up and down all season long. They played down to the competition clearly. This is a dangerous Florida State team. I've gotten a chance to see them over the past couple of weeks. They have a fast defense. You know, they have speed all over the place. The quarterback is susceptible to interceptions, though. He likes to run more than he's a better, much better runner than he is a passer. So if Patrick Turner can, control the passing game for Maryland, they should be on their way to a victory. Again, this is a game where Maryland, if you're Maryland, I mean, you lose this game, you don't deserve to play you don't deserve to win the ACC if you lose this game. At home, perfect setup, Florida State against us, a young quarterback. But we'll see. I would definitely expect a close game down at College Park tonight. You know, college football, again, it's going to come down, you know, to the last week as far as these games go. It's going to come down to that championship Saturday where you'll have the SEC. It's going to come down to the SEC championship or then the Big 12 championship both of those championships. I mean, SEC championship, you'll have Florida and Alabama who more than likely both will be will come in with opportunities to go to a championship game. Alabama probably will come in undefeated. Florida will likely come in with just one loss. And in the Big 12, you'll have Missouri versus, you know, one of these teams. I mean, who knows? It could be either Oklahoma. It'd be Oklahoma, Texas, or Texas Tech. The question for the BCS will be, which one of these teams will they take? If all three of those teams, Texas Tech, Texas, and Oklahoma, have one loss going into the that Big 12 championship. I mean, which one of those teams is going to be on the outs as far as at large berth in a BCS game? One of those teams is not going to play for one of those teams is not going to play in the BCS game. So that will be a major question for those people, for those committees who will be choosing who will play in a particular BCS games come this postseason in college football. Come the bowl season, I should say. College football has no postseason, which is a major problem later on in December and, of course, in early January. So college, it should be an exciting day of college football. Looking forward to it. That Texas Tech game against Oklahoma again. Go to the refrigerator during commercials because you do not want to miss a second of that game. That game, you can miss a score if you go use a bathroom. You can miss 14 points being scored. That is going to be a high scoring game. Update time on this Saturday morning wake up call, 22nd of November 2008. Michael Vick has admitted to directly placing family dogs in his ring kennel, like we didn't already know that, with trained pit bulls. Now, this is important because Vick initially did not admit to doing that. Before he took a polygraph test, which proved that he was lying. So this report, comes from the U.S. Department of Agriculture. Oklahoma City Thunder have fired their coach, P.J. Carlissimo, after just 13 games. Carlissimo, during his tenure with both Oklahoma and Seattle, was just 21-74. Scott Brooks has been named the interim coach of the Oklahoma City Thunder. NBA scores. Orlando takes out Indiana 100-98. Big game out of Dwight Howard, 24 points, 17 rebounds. Houston defeats Washington. The Wizards 103-91. The Wizards are 1-9 right now. The Nets survived Toronto in overtime. Vince Carter had a game-winning reverse dunk and finished with 39 points, 129-127. Boston, in a homecoming for KG, takes out Minnesota 95-78. The Lakers, in a late game, defeat Denver 104-90. Lakers improved to 10-1 on the season. And San Antonio absolutely crushes, and I mean crushes, the Utah Jazz 119-94. Other winners in the NBA included Philadelphia, Atlanta, Milwaukee, Dallas, New Orleans, Portland, and Chicago. Coming up on the Saturday morning wake-up call, we have NFL picks on a Week 12. And this is one of the best times of the year for the NFL as we head into Thanksgiving, and definitely looking forward to this next few weeks of football. So that's coming up on the Saturday morning wake-up call. Week number 12 in the NFL, and it's money time. As we head towards Thanksgiving, these games, as the weather turns to snow and sleet and rain and ice, a great time of football as we head into the Week 12. I got four games for you, and I got two upset specials. We'll begin in Baltimore, where the Philadelphia Eagles are traveling to Baltimore to take on the Ravens. The Ravens, again, are coming off a just embarrassing loss to the New York Giants. And, I mean, it's no embarrassment to lose to the Giants, but when you get ran over like they did, 200 yards rushing allowed, it is not a pretty sight. So they go in, so they try to recover from a loss to the Giants. Philadelphia trying to recover from that tie. And hopefully Donovan McNabb studied his rule book on understanding what ties are, that there are ties in the NFL. Baltimore is favored by a point and a half, and a very difficult game to pick. But listen, when it comes down to, you know, when it comes down to two basically evenly matched teams, both good defenses, both pretty good running games, both have just, you know, been solid organizations over the past decade. So you got to take the quarterback. I mean, Philadelphia does have Donovan McNabb. Baltimore has Joe Flacco. Flacco struggled a little bit last week against the Giants pass rush, which was no surprise. Play that was okay, but I could see him making a couple of mistakes against this Philly defense where Jim Johnson likes to blitz, likes to bring the whole house in the kitchen in terms of his blitz packages. And you know, Philadelphia, over the Andy Reid eras, they've always found a way to bounce back from a disappointment, whether it be a disappointing loss, whether it be an injury, and what have you, or whether it be something like a tie that you had last week. I like Philadelphia in a close, and I mean close game. This game could be 20-17, it could be 17-14, 13-10. It'll be a close, low-scoring game, but I'll take the Philadelphia Eagles to keep their playoff hopes alive in Baltimore. Game number two, the New York Giants, the red-hot world champion Giants, traveled to Arizona to take on another hot team, the Arizona Cardinals. Right now, you know, if you had an MVP vote, you would have to vote for Kurt Warner. He's played great, 20 touchdowns, just 7 interceptions. He's the highest rated quarterback in the league right now. And the Giants are favored by 3.5 points. Hey, they are the world champions, and they are 9-1. But I just got this feeling. I mean, I like what Arizona's doing. They have the best wide receiver tandem in the league right now. Good article on Fitzgerald and Anquan Boldin in Sports Illustrated this week. Read that way if you get an opportunity to. I'm just feeling Arizona right now. They don't have the pressure anymore of trying to win that division. That division is long gone. They can collapse and still win that division by 2 games. So it's just a matter of them playing for playoff positioning and home field advantage possibly, as they only trail Carolina by 1 game for that second spot. This would be a big win for Arizona because they are 7-3, Giants 9-1. Hey, I mean, you never know what can happen. If they win this game, they'd be just a game behind the Giants, and they would have a head-to-head tiebreaker advantage over the Giants. So I like Arizona in this game. I can see a lot of points being put on them. I can see a 27-24, you know, 31-28, that type of game would be a very close game. But I think that Arizona would be able to make enough plays to get by the Giants. And, hey, the Giants are so due for a bad game. I mean, I keep saying it every week just about they're due. You know, they're playing on such a high level. One of these games, the Giants are going to come back down to earth for at least a game, maybe not 2 games, but at least a game. So I like Arizona in this upset. New England travels down to South Beach, Miami, where they take on the Miami Dolphins. And this is a big, big, big game for the New England Patriots. The Patriots right now find themselves on the outside looking in terms of the playoff position in the AFC. Now, keep in mind, they have already lost to Miami once. They got knocked around back in Foxborough earlier in the season. That's when Miami first unveiled that wildcat offense, and New England had no answer for it. If New England loses this game, they would be 2 games behind Miami as far as the playoffs are concerned. And they already are trailing Indianapolis because of the head-to-head Indianapolis beat them, and Baltimore, and because of their conference record. Baltimore has a better conference record. So this is borderline a must-win game for the New England Patriots. They still have games with Pittsburgh. They still have another game with Buffalo. The schedule, I mean, they have a decent schedule, but it is not easy. They really need to get this game in the worst way. Miami is favored by 2.5 points, but I like New England in this game. I just think there will be a sense of urgency for them. They're desperate for this win coming off that tough Thursday night game last week. They've had 10 days against the Jets where they lost in overtime. They've had 10 days to get themselves right to prepare for Miami. I expect Bill Belichick to come out with a game plan that will contain that wildcat offense. I don't expect Miami to be as successful with that offense against New England. So, again, in a close game, I like the New England Patriots to keep pace with the New York Jets and keep their playoff hopes very much alive in the very tough AFC. game of the week and also slash upset special, we travel to Tennessee, the home of the undefeated Tannehill Titans, and this is where Tennessee is going to go down. I believe that as they will take on the New York Jets, the Jets have played well. The Jets have, you know, coming off that great win versus New England in New England. Tennessee is favored by 6, but again, I like the Jets in this game because I think the Jets will be able to stop Tennessee's running game. And this, and I just love how the Jets are playing. They're running the football. Brett Favre has been corralled by Eric Mangini, and good job for Mangini. Listen, Mangini is not a fool, okay? He knows Brett Favre is a gunslinger, and he knows that when you look at how effective Brett Favre was last year, it was because of the running game. Ryan Grant was running the ball down people's throat. Brett Favre would manage the game, make very good decisions with the ball, and then led Green Bay to a 13-3 record. You can't go out there and let Brett Favre win games by himself, because chances are, if you do that, he's gonna throw 2 or 3 picks, and you're not gonna win the game. So you want Brett Favre throwing the ball about 20 to 25 times. You want Thomas Jones running the ball effectively and also playing tough defense. The Jets defense is one of the best in the league, top 10. They have a good secondary. They give good pressure on the quarterback. And I could just see them turning Kerry Collins over a couple of times. Though I do think Kerry Collins has played well this season. I like the Jets. I mean, again, call it a gut feeling, call it, you know, Tennessee's luck, not so much not luck, but Tennessee finally coming down a bit. They've played 2 tough games over the last 2 weeks against Green Bay and also in Jacksonville. So I like the Jets in this game. I can see it 24-17. I can see it 21-17. It will be a very tough physical defensive game. So I'll take the Jets. So there you go. I have the Jets upsetting Tennessee, New England defeating Miami, Arizona upsetting the Giants, and Philly surviving the Ravens. There you go, Week 12 NFL picks. Coming up, I have Inside the Burgundy and Gold. We'll talk about the Washington Redskins, what happened last week, what needs to happen this week. That's coming up on the Saturday morning wake-up call. Now, like I said earlier, they probably do not even deserve that song, but hey, they're still 6-4, they're still in the playoff hunt, and they're still right now, for the time being, at least for the next, you know, 28 hours, are holding down the number 6 spot in the NFC. And right now, the Redskins are in a crisis mode. They are in a absolute crisis mode. Every team in the NFL, as you look through these seasons, see from season to season, goes through it just about. Unless you're a 10-1, a 9-1 Giants, unless you're a 10-0 Titans Tennessee, unless you're, you know, 16-0 New England, 13-0 Indianapolis, some of those teams over the course of the past 5-6 years who have had big time regular seasons year in and year out. Most NFL teams have to deal with this. They have to deal with a losing streak. They have to deal with injuries. They have to deal with the media, like guys like me ripping them. They have to deal with off-the-field issues, case in point, you know, Pac-Man Jones. So it's no different for the Washington Redskins. Right now, their offense cannot score to save its life. They're averaging 18 points a game. They have a beat-up offensive line, and Jason Campbell absolutely is taking a beating right now. You know, if you want to know why Jim Zorn is not calling pass plays beyond 10, 15, 20 yards, Because Jason Campbell doesn't have enough time to throw the football. I mean, that's all there is to it. The offense is very stagnant. It's vanilla right now. I mean, you can almost predict what the Redskins are going to do offensively. You have a banged-up running back in Clint Portis, who probably should not have played last week. I mean, let's be honest about that. When you don't practice coming off a bye week, there's a pretty good chance that you shouldn't play. that's a pretty good reason for not playing. But they let Clint Boyce play, and he had what he had, you know, had a decent game, 15 carries for 68 yards. But to me, if he wasn't going to run the ball more than 15 times, then you know what, he should have sat out. Santana Moss is nicked up. And, you know, and to compound all that, the Redskins have gotten away from what got them to a 6-2 record, and that was running, using the run to set up the pass. Over the course of the last two games against Pittsburgh and Dallas, the Redskins have run they've thrown the ball 76 times, and they've run the ball 33 times. And mind you, these two games have been, for the better part, for most of these games, have been extremely competitive. Especially the Dallas game, where the Redskins were leading for most of the game. The Pittsburgh game did not get out of hand until the fourth quarter. And that game was close throughout. So hey, we are going to find out about Jim Zorn. You know, it's nice when everybody's calling you a genius after a 4-1 start, or after a 6-2 start, and you know the offense has opened up. You know, players are responding. The quarterback's developing, and, you know, this is not Joe Gibbs. This is not 3 yards in a cloud of dust. It's beautiful. When everything's going right, you look great. You look like Vince Lombardi. But here's what we're going to find out about Jim Zorn. When things are tough, when things are, you know, when the Redskins are on the ropes, and the Redskins are on the ropes. If you do not think the Redskins are on the ropes, you're just not being realistic, right? You're just not being a realistic fan, or you're just not being realistic in general. You don't see the Redskins on the ropes. They are clearly headed in the wrong direction. So can Jim Zorn rally the troops when everything's not perfect? And can Jason Campbell step up when everything's not perfect? The running game was one of one of the best in the league as far as statistically. He was getting good pass protection where he wasn't getting hit for the most part. He had good throwing lanes. He had receivers getting open. Now he's been getting hit too much. He's been getting hit too much, actually. But now we're going to find out about him. Playing quarterback is a tough position. You're going to get hit. We're going to find out where Jason Campbell can step up his game and take this team to the playoffs. Remember last year when the Redskins made the playoffs, Campbell got hurt against the Chicago Bear game, and it was Todd Collins who, along with the defense and running game, led the Washington Redskins to the playoffs. So the Redskins, this is, you know, they are in crisis mode. I mean, I don't think there's any question about it. I'm calling it what it is. I'm calling it exactly what it is. They have an absolute must-win game against Seattle. You cannot, with the Giants coming into FedEx in 2 weeks, you cannot. Or next week, you cannot lose to the Seattle Seahawks. Can't do it. And that game will not be an easy game. Seattle is bad this year, but Hasselbeck has returned to their starting lineup, and that is a tough place to play. That's one of those stadiums. Quest Field is one of those stadiums where it doesn't matter how bad a team is; it's just a tough place to play. Similar to like Arrowhead Stadium, there are certain places in the NFL, regardless of record, you're going to be in for a dogfight when you travel to that place, and Quest Field is one of those places. So that will not be an easy game for the Redskins, and the Redskins haven't blown anybody out all season long, so you would be almost surprised if it wasn't a close game tomorrow. I do think the Redskins will find a way to defeat Seattle, and they have to have that game because the Cowboys – and right on their heels, you have Atlanta at 6-4. You have some teams at 5-5. You know, that race for those last couple of spots in the NFC are going to be wide open, and they're going to be, especially for that sixth seed in the NFC. So the Redskins have to have that game. And again, I want to know what Jim Zorn is made of. And please, enough about the defense. Okay, I heard some criticism about the defense after the Dallas game. Listen, their defense has played great this year. They're ranked number 4 in terms of total defense, in terms of yards. They're in the top 5 or top 10 in every major defensive category. You know, points per game, rushing yards per game, passing yards per game. So they don't get to the quarterback enough as far as sacks. They don't have any pass rushers, legitimate pass rushers. They're top level. So if you don't have a pass rush, you're not going to get to the quarterback. Jason Taylor has been awful this year. He's been either injured or just ineffective. Andre Carter is a decent at best pass rusher at defensive end. So they're doing, you know, Greg Blosch is doing the best he can with what he has, and he does not have much as far as the Redskins pass rush is concerned. So I've heard enough about the Redskins, about, you know, the Redskins defense, not forcing enough turnovers. They don't, not being able to stop. I mean, last week against Dallas, they couldn't keep Dallas off the field in the fourth quarter. But part of that reason was because their offense was three and out, turnover here, sacks, penalties. So that loss was not on the Washington defense. You told me before that game that the Redskins were going to hold Dallas to 14 points and that defense was going to force Dallas into two turnovers. I told you the Redskins would. I would have said that the Redskins would win that game. So it all comes down to these next couple of weeks. And again, that Seattle game is an absolute must-win for the Redskins. They have to get the job done come tomorrow at Quest Field. Coming up, I still have top stories. We still have our star of the week and much, much more on the Saturday morning wake-up call. Update time on this. And we're at the top of the 11 o'clock hour on this 22nd of November, 2008. Michael Vick has admitted to directly placing dogs in his ring that were trained, that were tortured and basically beaten up by trained pit bulls. This report, of course, comes from the U.S. Department of Agriculture. As you remember, Vick denied direct involvement and basically passed it off on his cousins and his other people that he was dealing with that was torturing and beating up dogs. But Vic failed to took a polygraph and, kind of took back that statement that he had nothing to do with. So Vic now fully comes out to admit it. And, why he would wait this long to admit this, in August, it's just, you just have to shake your head at Michael. You're like, what is he thinking? But thinking is not one of his strong suits, as we know. The Oklahoma City Thunder have fired their coach PJ Carlissimo after just 13 games. And gee, you talk about quick firings. Carlissimo this year was 1-12. Over the course of his tenure with Seattle, Carlissimo was 21-74 in 95 games. Scott Brooks has been named interim coach for the Oklahoma City Thunder. NBA scores. Orlando defeats Indiana 100-98. Big game out of Dwight Howard, 24 points, 17 rebounds. Houston takes out Washington 103-91. Big fourth quarter out of Tracy McGrady. Washington is 1-9 in this young season. The New Jersey Nets defeat Toronto in overtime 129-127. Vince Carter had a game-winning reverse dunk and also finished with 39 points. Boston defeats Minnesota 95-78. And the Lakers take out Denver 104-90. Lakers improved to 10-1 on the season. San Antonio, other winners were San Antonio, Philly, Atlanta, Milwaukee, Dallas, New Orleans, and Portland. So there you go for your night in the NBA. Coming up, we have Star of the Week. I will give you the candidates. You still have time to vote, but Star of the Week is coming up on the Cyril Quinn radio program. Introducing a new little segment to the program, Star of the Week. We take four or five athletes who had great performances over the course of the week and choose which one of them stands out and which one of them deserves to be the star of the week. I have five guys this week. One, Stephon Curry, who was, of course, the point guard/guard from Davidson. Davidson, of course, almost made it to the Final Four last year before bowing out to eventual champion the Kansas Jayhawks. Curry had a huge game against Oklahoma this week. If you got a chance to see it, he had 44 points. Oklahoma, of course, the game was at Oklahoma. Yeah, 44 points, 27 in that second half, and he almost single-handedly rallied his team back from a 21-point second-half deficit. They end up losing the game 82-78. And so much for that, you know, adjustment that he was going to have to make from guard to point guard. I think he looks like early on this season like he's making that adjustment just fine. Blake Griffin, in that same game of Oklahoma, of course, is Oklahoma forward center. And this is a guy who had 25 points, 21 rebounds in that win over Davidson. Griffin probably, more than likely, will be the number one pick in next year's NBA draft. He's around 6'9", 6'10". He's strong, strong as an ox. The guy is a very good player. But, again, he had a big game, 25 points and 21 rebounds. Albert Pujols wins his second NL MVP. I have some issues with it, which I will get to later. But, again, he is NL MVP. He is probably the best player in all of baseball. He beat out Ryan Howard for the award. Dustin Pedroia, the little engine that could, wins his very first AL MVP. Of course, the Red Sox second baseman, has developed into one of the most better players in all of baseball, one of the better hitters in baseball right now. He's following up a year where he won Rookie of the Year, and only a handful of guys have done that. Ryan Howard was the last one to do that, to win a Rookie of the Year one year and win an MVP the next. And finally, we have Phil Dawson, the place kicker for the Cleveland Browns, kicked a 56-yard field goal at Buffalo to give the Cleveland Browns a win over the Buffalo Bills and a devastating loss for the Bills as their playoff hopes are just falling by the wayside. Again, 56 yards. I don't care where the game is at. 56 yards anywhere is a big-time kick, let alone in that stadium, outdoors, on a cold November night. That was a big-time kick out of Dawson. So there you go. Curry, Griffin, Pujols, Pedroia, and Phil Dawson. And I'll probably have to lean towards Albert Pujols being the star of the week. Again, the guy, and I have issues with it, so it's so ironic because I didn't agree with him actually winning the MVP. But the bottom line is he's arguably the best player in all of baseball. The guy's just been, he might go into the Hall of Fame like right now. I mean, he's had that good a career. He's not even 30 yet, wins his second MVP, and he'll certainly win a couple more as his career progresses. And just had a great season playing for the struggling Cardinals, helped keep them in the wild card race. And he is a great, great player. I mean, guy has all-time great talent and certainly was deserving of the award, even though I didn't think he should have won it. You can't argue that he didn't deserve it. I just thought that, Ryan Howard, was more valuable to his team than Albert Pujols was, but Pujols is the star of the week. And of course, I will vote on the star of the week each week on Friday, Thursday, and Friday. On Friday, I will have four or five athletes who've had big weeks, and you can vote on that at my blog URL, or of course at my MySpace URL. So check that out, and I look forward to hearing from you on the upcoming Stars of the Week programs. The call number is 347-215-6180. Coming up after the update, a couple of stories that took place over the course of the week that I want to talk about. So that's coming up after the update on the Saturday morning wake-up call. This is your host, Cyril Quinn. Michael Vick has admitted to directly placing family dogs in his ring that were beat up by trained pit bulls. This report, of course, according to the U.S. Department of Agriculture, Vick initially denied direct involvement in placing dogs in that ring and having them beaten up and tortured, but taking a polygraph told otherwise, and Vick finally comes out and admits to it. And again, why he didn't admit to it from the get up, I will never understand it. But we are talking about Michael Vick. Oklahoma City Thunder fired coach PJ Carlissimo. Carlissimo was 1-12 this season, and Oklahoma City currently is on a 10-game losing streak. This comes as a little bit surprising to me. I thought they would give him a little bit more time to kind of try to turn that thing around, but they have seen enough. In 95 games with the combination of Seattle and Oklahoma, Carlissimo was 21-74. Scott Brooks is named interim coach, and immediately takes over the reins for the Oklahoma City Thunder. NBA scores: Orlando defeats Indiana 100-98. Dwight Howard has 24 points and 17 rebounds. Houston defeats Washington 103-91. Washington falls to 1-9. New Jersey Nets defeat Toronto in overtime 129-127. Vince Carter had a reverse game-winning dunk and finished with 39 points. Boston defeats Minnesota 95-78. The Lakers go to 10-1 with a win, with a 104-90 win over the Denver Nuggets. And San Antonio crushes us, Utah, 119-94. Other winners in the NBA field included Philadelphia, Atlanta, Milwaukee beat New York, Dallas, New Orleans, Portland, and Chicago. So there you go with a night of the of NBA scores. Right now we have some stories of the week that kind of took some top stories of the week that kind of overshadowed the sporting week. And I had number one, Pac-Man Jones being reinstated by the NFL. He will be eligible to play come December 7th against Pittsburgh. And I mean, how many opportunities is this guy going to get, realistically? I mean, you know about the arrest. You know about he's fighting his own bodyguard. I mean, I know why Dallas wants him back. I mean, they want him to play cornerback, and they want him to, to lead their team. I mean, they want him to not lead their team, but they want him to play cornerback to strengthen their secondary. But the NFL, to me, Roger Goodell, who comes off as this, quote-unquote, long arm of the law, and this, this tough commissioner who's not going to take any nonsense, he left him back in a second time. I mean, how many chances can one guy get? I mean, if you kick Pac-Man Jones out, nobody will be crying for Pac-Man Jones. Nobody. As many chances as he's gotten over the last 2 years, nobody would. I don't think one media person or one anybody within the NFL, even his own teammates, probably wouldn't complain about him being kicked out. And to me, it's only a matter of time before he gets into more trouble. I mean, truthfully, I don't see. I mean, what? Based on his history, what is going to stop him from doing something else that he has no business doing? But again, Pac-Man Jones is back in the NFL, and again, we'll be scheduled to play against the Pittsburgh Steelers in 2 weeks in a key December 7th matchup. Mike Mussina has retired from baseball. Mussina, of course, pitched 17 seasons with the Orioles and most recently the New York Yankees. Mussina leaves baseball with a tremendous one win loss record. He was 270 and 153 over 110 games over 500. And there's been a question about whether or not Mike Mussina is a Hall of Famer, and I've heard a number of outlets saying, he's right on that line. Somebody please explain to me how he's on that Hall of Fame line. I mean, the guy, you look at his career, and when I was going through it last night, I mean, he's without question to me a Hall of Famer. I mean, you're talking about a winning percentage of over 600. You're talking about having 11 more years where he had 15 wins or more, six years where he had 18 wins or more. He won, by the way, 7 gold gloves. Over the course of his career, the guy was one of the best. He's one of the top 7 or 8 pitchers in all of baseball, period. For a 10-year, I would say from 93 to about 2003, 2004, Mussina was a top pitcher. Now, were there other guys like Randy Johnson and Roger Clemens and Pedro Martinez and, you could throw in Greg Maddux, in that mix, and maybe Curt Schilling and John Smoltz to a lesser extent. Were they better? Yes. But they also, when you're talking about, you know, the majority of them are not only Hall of Famers, should be Hall of Famers, but are probably all-time greats, especially when you talk about Randy Johnson, Clemens, and Pedro Martinez, and you know, and Greg Maddux. But that doesn't take away from, you know, Mike Mussina. Mike Mussina had a great career. Not a good career. He had a great career. He never won a Cy Young, but he finished in the top 10, top 5, you know, repeatedly. And he had a Hall of Fame career. Is he an all-time great? No. Is he a mortal pitcher? No. You know, he's not a Cy Young, but he is a Hall of Fame pitcher. And the credentials, you know, he's a guy who did not hang on. He finished the season. He finishes out his career winning 20 games and basically almost carrying a Yankee starting pitching staff that struggled with injuries and just inconsistent performance out of their pitchers. So Mussina, again, there's no question in my mind he's a Hall of Famer. If I had a vote, he would definitely go in. He probably would have to wait. He's probably going to have to wait a couple times to get in. I mean, everybody talks about Burt Blyleven as being the guy. All I heard is, well, if Mussina has to get in, then Burt Blyleven has to get in. Burt Blyleven did not have anywhere near the career that Mike Mussina had. Burt Blyleven is 37 games over 500. Okay, 37 games over 500. Mike Mussina is 110 games over 500. Burt Blyleven won 17 more games than Mussina, but he also pitched 5 more years than Mike Mussina. Think about that. Five more years than him too. 5 more years. I mean, that's a lot. That's a lot of extra games. Blyleven was a compiler, as in comparison to Mussina. So I mean, though I do think Blyleven deserves to be in, I wouldn't take him over Mike Mussina. I definitely would not take him over one Mike Mussina. I mean, he's a, you know, guy should be in the Hall of Fame. Hal Steinbrenner had, staying on a Yankee theme, Hal Steinbrenner has assumed control of the New York Yankees after George Steinbrenner, who was owner and chairman and every other position, top position that the Yankees had over the course of the last 35 years, held that position, and Hal officially takes control. But over the course of the last 3 or 4 years, as George Steinbrenner's health has kind of like deteriorated a little bit. He had a couple of fainting spells of recently in the last 3 or 4 years. So Hal, his brother Hank, Randy Levine, they have Brian Cashman. They have a number of guys who kind of run the show with the Yankees. I mean, Yankees have two different factions basically. One, you know, New York faction and also a Tampa faction, which has almost been a problem in a way. It's almost been too many voices. But you know, Hal will be in charge. I mean, he's going to be the guy who, you know, is going to be calling the shots. He's going to oversee just about everything. Hank will still be, you know, overseeing the likes of Brian Cashman. But it's going to be Hal. You know, these decisions on who the Yankees sign, who they don't sign, and how the money is spent and what have you are going to be. They're going to be how Steinbrenner is called. And, you know, you can say what you want about George Steinbrenner. The guy, you know, what you think about what he bought the Yankees for and what he has turned the Yankees into, it's pure genius. I mean, he bought them for basically about around $10 million, and the Yankees are now one of the most valuable franchises in all the sports. They're worth close to $1 billion. They have by far and away the most valuable franchise in baseball. They are an enterprise. I mean, Yankees have become global, which is part of their problem. Part of the problem is they have become too global in terms of, that's kind of affected, you know, baseball decisions. I mean, they make decisions more in terms of baseball than more in terms of trying to market themselves than making sound baseball moves. So they might go for the big market player instead of going for the better fundamental and solid player. So, you know, Yankees are certainly trying to turn that around. They are trying their best to get both CeCe Sabathia and A.J. Burnett, or CeCe Sabathia and Derek Lowe. And, you know, Hal Steinbrenner will be leading the charge for the New York Yankees. And, again, this is it's not a surprise at all. You know, Steinbrenner has stayed out of the mix for the better part of the last 3 or 4 years. He really he only made statements through the media. He really has stayed. I can't remember the last time I even seen George Steinbrenner do a live interview, a television interview. To be honest with you, it's been Hank and Hal and Cashman and what have you. Hank. A lot of people thought Hank Steinbrenner was going to assume control based on the fact that he's the one that makes all the noise in terms of the media and in terms of statements he makes through the back pages of the New York paper. So a little bit surprising that Hal Steinbrenner takes over, but Hal, if you read the article, Hal was the one that spent the most time with the Yankees in terms of from a day-to-day basis. Hank spends more time in terms of handling the other businesses within the family with the horse racing and what have you. So, there's a new boss for the New York Yankees. It should be a very interesting week in sports. You have a lot going on with the college football and with the NFL. It is a big weekend of football. I mean, if you love football, then this is the weekend for you. Again, a lot of these tough divisional matchups are coming down to the wire. You got a lot of these teams that are just trying to jockey for a playoff positioning. And now when you get into the NFL, you're looking at it being a war of attrition. Now, I mean, injuries are starting to mount up. You're trying to obviously win games, but now you also are trying to stay healthy. You're trying to stay healthy, and a lot of times it's not the best team that wins. In many cases, it's the most healthiest team that wins that can win a possible Super Bowl. But if you look at the NFL right now, again, you have the Giants and Tennessee who have separated themselves, and Pittsburgh to a lesser extent, who have separated themselves from the rest of the field, and the Giants right now are just looking borderline dominant. I mean, they are absolutely looking borderline dominant with some of the performances that they have put on in the past couple of weeks. I mean, you think about what they've done. They went at Pittsburgh, they destroyed Baltimore, they destroyed the Dallas Cowboys, they went at Philly, which was a game that Philly clearly wanted to win in the worst way, and they're playing top football right now, and they are borderline in being dominant. And I didn't think that was going to be that I would use that term this year, considering how much parity there is in the NFL, and also considering that there's not a great difference between the best team and the difference in talent between the best team in the NFL and the worst team in the league is probably as close as it has ever been. It probably is. I would say it definitely is. So, Giants are playing great. Tennessee, again, I've been extremely impressed over the past couple of weeks when they have won games with Chicago and Jacksonville, and they have not played their best football. You look at it in that Chicago game, Chicago takes away their running game, but Kerry Collins is able to make enough plays to take over that game in the second half. Then last week at Jacksonville against a tough divisional rival, Jacksonville goes up 14-3. And Kerry Collins, again, has a big second half. They scored 21 points in the second half, and they win the game going away 24-14. So, though I am extremely impressed with Tennessee, I still think that they played a little too close to the vest. They played too many close games. I mean, you would like to see them just overwhelm people, but that's probably going to be their mantra from here on out. They're probably not going to be able to overwhelm people because they just don't have an explosive offense. They have a good offense, but they don't have an offense that's going to score 35 to 40 points over the course of the game. But what they're doing is working for them. It's without question, it's working for them. And they're playing some of the best defense that you will ever see as far as their front seven. Albert Haynesworth is playing like a man possessed right now. He's playing for that contract. That's what he's playing for. He's a franchise player, but he's looking for that next big contract without question. We're going to take a phone call. You are on the air.
Hey, what's up, Surreal? This is D-Dot, man. I'm loving your show, man.
What's going on, man? How you been?
I've been all right, man. I came to talk about some football. with
all
you.
Right, yeah, all right, go ahead. Go ahead. It's on you.
I definitely agree with you about the Tennessee Titans. You know, I'm impressed with them because I would have bet anybody in the world. They would have told me they'd have been 10-0. You know, so right now I'm with them. But like you said, they're playing it too close to the vest. And I think if they play a team like Pittsburgh with the experience, they're going to overwhelm them. Because Pittsburgh is not playing to be undefeated. They're just playing, like you said, to stay healthy and make the playoffs.
Right,
And when they get there to the playoffs, they know what it takes to win. And I think, like you said, if they play the way they played their last game with the turnovers and take the run away, it's going to just be too much for them. And Pittsburgh can knock them out easily in the playoffs.
Well, it's funny as you say that because they play, they actually, over later on in the season, they play both Pittsburgh and Indianapolis.
Yeah.
So they will lose one of those games. I think they're probably going to end up losing about two games. It'll be 14-2, 13-3. But
once they really clinch home field, I think they might slow it up. Like you said, because they just want to stay healthy. Last year was a big deal to go undefeated, but once everybody saw what happened to New England, I don't think Tennessee really even cared about going undefeated. Once they could clinch home field advantage, I think they're going to take it into cruise control and get everybody, you know, still play, but get everybody ready for the postseason. So they're going in
healthy. You got to be healthy. At this time of year, the most important thing is being healthy. Now, you know, I have to announce that you are the very first caller of this program.
You get
props for that. And I know if people don't know, well, listen, we know it. We went to school together, so I know we've been knowing this dude for 10 years.
Yeah,
10
years.
10 years. What is this? I mean, I didn't get to talk about it because I have so much other things to talk about over the course of the hour, but what is the deal with the Knicks? I mean, I know you got to be psyched about it.
I'm not psyched at all about the trade. I think that was
the trade. It's clear cap space, though. They're going to be able to go after LeBron in 2010.
No, if the cap space was to get rid of either Zach Randolph, Eddie Curry, or Crawford had was 2 years left.
We got Zach Randolph and Ed Curry.
And right now, even though we want to be competitive, right? You saw what happened last night?
Yeah, it was ugly last night.
They got smacked. At the same time, this is another thing I didn't like. Donnie Walsh came and said he's going to take away all the drama. Because I'm a big Knicks fan. I'm going to always be a Knicks fan. It's my family.
Right.
They make moves I don't like, but I won't never say, I'm not a fan of them. I'm a fan. So Donnie Walsh said he's going to come and change the culture. So what they do? They get Stephon Marbury to run around, which is wrong.
Well, they've done a terrible job of handling that situation.
It's still a circus. And then you say you want to clear a cap space, but you want to be competitive, so you give away Jamal Crawford. The first trade on the first deal on the table night before was Malik Rose.
How did they get Malik Rose
to Jamal Crawford?
The thing is, though, they have to tell their fans that they have to say that just to try to sell them seats. In reality, they would really want to say that, hey, we're gonna take a lot of losses, but we're playing for 2010. But you can't tell fans who are paying $2,000 to a courtside seat that they're not trying to hear that. So they gotta try to say we're trying to win, but we're looking towards the future. When you and I know that they are looking towards the future and they can care less about winning right now, so they have to sell that to their fans. But
I
agree.
That's another thing too. If they could guarantee they're gonna bring LeBron James or put their best foot forward,
there's no guarantee. No, there's no guarantee.
The fans wouldn't mind as long as we competitive. That's one thing about the Knicks. They soft.
Yeah.
They have no heart. Even when the Knicks in the 80s were losing, people would still go because they know they're gonna fight. Even when they get blown out, they're gonna push somebody to the ground. They're gonna smack them up. You know, and let them know, like, this is New York. This is one of the toughest cities. You're not going to just come in here and walk on us. Now we got, like, the fake tough guys like Nate Robinson and the soft Chris Duhon. He's not supposed to be starting on nobody's team.
Yeah.
How are you in New York starting? He's not supposed to start on no NBA. He's not a starting point guard.
No, he's not.
I don't care what you say. He's not supposed to start on no team in the NBA.
Well, look, I'm about to wrap this thing up, man. I appreciate you calling, man. I'm definitely gonna get at you on your show, though.
No problem, man.
I'll take it easy. Keep doing your thing, man. And don't try to play the Giants again. Don't try to play the Philadelphia and let you know. All right, man. Take it easy.
You too. Later.
It was D-Dot, who, you know, one of my close, one of the players, D-Dot, getting his opinion on the Knicks. And I did not get to talk about that, but I'll definitely get to that in future shows about that trade. I thought it was a good trade for the Knicks, but, you know, they finally tried to clear out cap space. But thanks for tuning in to this. For this hour, we will be back next week, same time, same place, same blog channel. So we'll leave you with a little Sanford and Son. Take it easy. Have a great week. I'm
I'm going to go to the hospital.